All right, well, welcome to the Mary Hytken Dumont University here at ASBE. And tonight we're going to discuss a topic called Ona'ah. Ona'ah comes from, it's a Aramaic or late Hebrew derivation from the word lotonu. Don't afflict or oppress your neighbor. We shouldn't afflict our neighbor. And the rabbis interpret that in terms of overcharging. We shouldn't overcharge. Because the context there is the Torah is talking about, you know, you have the Jubilee year, and let's say you sell somebody a field a year before the Jubilee year, so then you sell it to him for $50,000, it's worth $50,000, but he only gets to live in it for a year. So it's not fair. Lo tonu, each at amito, don't afflict one another, don't overcharge for things. So there's the verse right here, and when you you sell a purchase to a friend, or you acquire from your friend, do not afflict, oppress one man, his brother. Now last week we saw the rabbis interpret the same kind of phrase to mean don't verbally afflict people, and that there's a specific prohibition not to verbally oppress people, not to get their hopes up when that you shouldn't be, not to make fun of them, to take advantage of their vulnerabilities, not to create false indebtedness, not to make people think that you did them a favor when you really didn't, and then they have to pay you back for it.
That's right.
Let's say I know that you're going out for dinner next Tuesday night. So I say, hey, would you like to come over for dinner on Tuesday night? I say, no, I'm busy. Oh, I'm so sorry, you can't make it. And now you think I invited you, so you have to invite me next Tuesday night. So the rabbis derive all that from this, and actually that's today's Daf Yomi, the page 58 in Bava Metzia. And a lot of this was discussed recently in the Daf Yomi, in the Daily Daf. But here's a summary of all the ideas about overcharging or defrauding people in business. So it says you shouldn't oppress your brother. Now, one of the questions is interesting. It says your brother, so would it apply to a Gentile? So we said last week that when it comes to the verbal oppression, of course not. How can you act that way toward anyone? Right? And then if we consider this a form of stealing, if overcharging is stealing, you're not allowed to steal from Gentiles. Or is it a special type of thing? Well, you know, usually everything's fair in business, but, and if you're too consenting, you say, did you agree to buy this for $5? You do. Okay. So then we're done. So, or do you say, no, this is an actual violation of a violation. It's very similar to the question we might ask about usury. Right, two adults agree that I'll lend you $1,000, but you have to pay me $1,100. So it seems like consensual agreement shouldn't be any problem. But there too, we say no. You can't just do that. What about here? Could you stipulate? I want you to know, I'm ripping you off. No. This is not worth.
I want you to know.
Yes, you want to buy this? That's fine. You see that price there? I want you to know, you could get it much cheaper somewhere else.
No.
But if you want to buy it, that's fine. I'm not willing to sell it less than that. Firstly, I need the cash. Secondly, my grandmother...
You're losing a sale if he overcharges and says you can go somewhere else.
Well, if
he
I...
He makes a sale, he makes money. He may lose a sale.
It takes two people. Let's say I get a sense that this person, I'm not going to lose the sale.
No.
He's in a rush. What's a convenience store? A convenience store is...
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Right. Yes. So the convenience store man says, look, I want you to know, if you go to Kroger's down the block, you can get this much cheaper. But this is a convenience store, and here you're going to pay $3 extra. As long as you know that, is it okay or not? We'll have to see. So let's take a look. So the first question is, why? Why are you not allowed to overcharge? As I said, if you're aware of it, why is it a problem? So why don't you read that for us? Would you like to read that for us? The root. Hannah. The root. Yeah, why? Sefer HaChinuch, why?
The root of the mitzvah is known, for it is logical. For if it were not written, it should have been written. For if it is not right to take people's money through lies and trickery, rather everyone merits in his whole what God has granted him his world and treat them uprightness. And everyone defeats, just as you won't afflict others, they won't afflict you. And it is of great value to the settling of society, and Hashem wanted the world to be settled.
Right. So, it's an obvious type of mitzvah. Of course you shouldn't oppress one another. Because after all, I don't want to oppress you, you won't oppress me. Then the world will be well settled, the community, the society will function well, and that's what God wants. Lola Tovra, God didn't make the world to be in chaos. Shevi Yitzhar, He made the world to be settled and proper, and like a tikkun olam, a fixing of the world. It's a similar expression, yeshuv haolam, everything should be nice and settled and organized. So obviously, you shouldn't do this. But also, everyone should, also is an element of lying. So now we get into an element of lying. So again, if I said to you, telling you up front, it only cost me $5. Most people charge $6. I'm charging you $10. So, and you agree, right? It's not an element of lying. But maybe it's something else. Based on this logic, I'm not tricking you, right? I'm not tricking you. I'm telling you up front. So we'll have to see later whether you can make such a stipulation. But in any event, let's continue.
Does he say, my product is better, that's why I'm charging you more, we get better service
right
here?
So then you get into, in a moment we'll talk about what price. Meaning, if it's too much, then you're oppressing someone. But the question is, what does it mean too much? Right? Chairs should normally cost, a chair like this should cost $20. Now this chair here, which is made out of leather, hand sewn, probably costs $100, if not more. So obviously everything depends on the market. So we'll get to that in a moment. Now then, the next question is, who violates it? Let's say obviously if the seller violates it, but what about the buyer? Can the buyer walks in and let's say I'm very knowledgeable. I was once friends with a good art collector. And the couple were big art collectors, and they would walk into an art shop or an antique shop, and they were experts in history and antiques. And the person would say, "Yeah, this is very old. I'm selling to you for $100." And they knew that belonged to Ben Franklin or who knows what in Europe or who knows what. And now, I don't know exactly how they conducted themselves, but if they were in that situation, to say, sure, $100, yeah, sure, we'll take it for, $90. All right, $90, we'll do it for $90. But they knew it's worth, it's priceless, it's worth, they can sell it for $300,000, because it was Beethoven's desk or something. Then, then the buyer is cheating the seller. And does that apply? Yes. Because we saw, okana, whether you sell or whether you buy, you shouldn't afflict. So the Mishnah says, whether you're the buyer or the seller, they have the law of affliction. So it applies to both sides. Presume if you're tricking someone, again, there might be a situation where you say, look, I'm telling you, you're charging me too little. And you say, that's fine for me, I'm happy with it. I didn't pay much for it anyway. I know it's not the going price. When you look in, you're a fancy art historian, and you look in your official book, and it says that, that this coin is worth something. But as far as I'm concerned, I paid $5 for it, I'll give it to you for $10. I don't really know the difference. So, again, we have to see whether that would work. Moving along. Now that we talk about what price. Now, this has always bothered me, and I'll leave it to the end, the surprise for the end, as to, whether any of this applies anymore. In other words, when the Talmud seems to be working in a world, which I'm not so familiar with, in which the price of a barrel of wheat, of a sack of wheat, was very set. The price of a sack of wheat was, and we can talk about it being a six more than the set price. We could be a six less than the set price. What is the set price? Who knows if there's a set price? So I don't know today if when you go to the store and you buy oranges, so sometimes it's 99 cents an orange, sometimes it's 59 cents a pound. I mean, it just varies. And depends on the quality of the oranges and what season it is and all that. And I don't know how it works. I'm sure the Kroger people know very well how it works. But, so how does it work? So let's take a look. What does the Gemara say? So the Rosh says in Kiddushin, chapter 1, Ot 17, Yud Zayin, when we talk about value, we mean at its place and at its time. You see, there's a problem when it comes to marriage. Let's say a man walks over to a woman and says, you were hereby betrothed to me with this Cracker Jack ring. Cracker Jack ring? How much would someone pay for a ring? No one's going to pay anything for a Cracker Jack ring. It's not worth anything. So they're not married because it's not worth something. not worth even a quarter. Now, let's say, however, you went to Cambodia and you had a Cracker Jack ring. I bet you can get some good money for that, because they don't have Cracker Jacks and they don't have rings and they don't have all the things you need in the village, let's say. Not the big cities, but in a village. So so over there, it's really worth something. So do you say that someone can get married in Memphis with a Cracker Jack ring because in Cambodia it's worth something? Talmud seems to say that, but not everyone agrees. Some people say, no, it may, since it might be worth something, Cambodia might be worth something here too. That's what they meant. They didn't mean that your price here is fixed by Cambodia. And it's not only a matter of marriage, but in all monetary matters, the Rush says, the Rush is in Kiddushin, Rush is in the laws of marriage, but it applies here as well, that price is affixed locally, not nationally. Now, the Rabbi Yerucham says, would you read that, Hannah?
Yes.
We will not say. Just for historical purposes, the Rush lived in Germany, and the Rabbi Yerucham lived in Provence. Go ahead.
We will not say in business that perhaps it is worth so much in such an end, in such and such a time or place, that is not applicable to overcharging in matters of business, rather each case according to its place and time.
Right. Let's see that again. Isn't that worth such and such? Right. It may be in such a place. It would have been. Maybe it would be worth it. No. Even though there's a line in the Talmud about the Kiddushin, about the marriage, it sounds like that. Say, no, that's not correct. It doesn't matter that it's worth something somewhere else. We're talking about that particular place. Now, so then I ask, how do we know the market value? Well, you know, there are books for this. You can look on the internet. I'm sure every merchant has certain prices, commodities, different things. What if I know this store is overpriced? Right? You know it. So maybe it's not a ripoff. That's what you know. It's a one of these, they have these upscale groceries, you know, in New York City and things like that. So in fancy neighborhoods. So everyone knows that they overcharge for their vegetables and everything else. Right? So maybe that's a, you know, sort of buyer beware. It's like a given. It's as if it's on condition that you overcharge. Is it the price only in the same type of stores? There are different prices for mini markets, Marshalls, Bloomingdale's, right? Maybe for a Bloomingdale's type of line of clothing, that's a reasonable price for a hat. You charge $150. But in a little schlocky store, you wouldn't expect to spend $150. No one would spend $150 for a hat in a little tiny store. So maybe it depends, you know, where it is and what it is. So I saw someone say that it could indeed be different depending on what type of store. Pesach, right? Do we say that the entire Pesach industry is one big ripoff, and that we don't accept that, and that we need to protest that? Or do we say, no, this is the price during Pesach. You know, supply, demand, there's a lot of supply of kosher food for Pesach, and there's a big demand for Pesach, and there are more Jews who keep Pesach, and Jews overbuy for Pesach. They think it's like some sort of a storm is coming to town, and they buy, you know, so much food for 1 week. You could eat for 10 weeks. So maybe that's the market, and that's why the prices are high. Or maybe no, it's a ripoff. It's the same piece of cheese, right? Obviously, can blueberries be more in the winter than the summer? You'd think so. And Rabbi Wiedeblank, who gives a nice lecture about this on Yom Torah, he says, it's the price and not the profit margin. We're not talking about the profit margin. We will mention a line in the Talmud, does mention, I think it's Daf Mem, page 40 in, I think it's 40b in the Bava Metzia, does mention the idea that maybe the 1/6, we're going to use the expression, you shouldn't overcharge 1/6. They say also that you shouldn't make more than 1/6 profit. But Rabbi Wiedeblank says that no, when we're talking here in the laws of overcharging, we're not talking about overcharging beyond your, you know, making too much profit. We're talking about giving going price. The going price usually includes a profit. Okay. Now I want to understand something else. Are we talking about stealing? You know, people sometimes say, oh, that's highway robbery. You want $100 for this chair? That's highway robbery. Really? Is it, from a technical point of view, is it robbery? You may feel like it's robbery, but is it actually plain and simple? Is it a violation of, you know, Ten Commandments, or that may be talking about something else? The verse in chapter 19 in Leviticus, Lo Tugnovah, you should not steal. So, could you read that for us, please?
Yes. Rabbi said, why must the Torah write a prohibition forbidding prohibition of robbery and overcharging.
So how come? Why does the Torah have three different departments? There's the usury department, there's the stealing department, and there's the overcharging department. It should all be one department. Go ahead.
It must teach all three. Had it taught only rubies,
that's the usury.
We could not learn to the others, for rubies is a kiddush.
A kiddush. It's a new idea.
A new idea, for even the borrower is forbidden to give.
Right, even the borrower, right, we say, but I want to. I want to give extra. I want to pay. No, you can't pay extra. So you say, but I wanted the loan. He didn't want to give me the loan for $100. He wanted $110. So I want it. He says, no, you violate. It's your violation. But I would have taken it for $100. No, you violated. So we see that it's a very strange thing. So we would say, well, that must be very strange. We're not going to apply other things from there. So you can't learn. You would not have been able to. To imply from other things that you say, this is such a weird law, you can't apply it to other places. Go ahead.
Had it taught only robbery, that which is totally against the will of the victim, we could not learn to ona'ah, in which the victim buys or sells willingly.
Now, there's a gap there in the text. Yes, and it comes to ona'ah, our topic for tonight, overcharging fraudulent sales. Yes, the victim is aware. He says, sir, you know I'm charging you $10 for this. Yes, I'm aware it's $10. What he doesn't know, what the merchant doesn't ask is, do you know that it's really worth $8? That's what he doesn't ask. So he's aware that what he's doing, I'm buying it, what he may not be aware of. So the Talmud calls it that ona is a case where you are aware, but you're not really aware of the fraud, you're just aware of what you're doing, that you're buying it at such and such a price. It's a, go ahead.
Does not know he was cheated, so he cannot pardon it. Regarding the others, the victim can pardon his loss.
Right, so you might say, well, the reason, if the Torah just said, don't cheat your fellow, and then from there we figure out you can't steal. We say, no, the reason you can't cheat your fellow is because he doesn't know he was being cheated. But in stealing, I'll steal from him today, and I'll give it back to him tomorrow, so maybe it's not so bad. So we see from here two things. Number one, Ona is willing. You're the victim enters it willingly. On the other hand, he enters it unknowingly. He's willing, but unknowing. He's willing to buy it, but he's unaware of the being ripped off in the price. All right, so we have some other things to think about. The buyer can be in violation of ona'ah, even the buyer. Why? As Rabbi Wiederblank called it, it's a result of a disequilibrium of knowledge. There's a problem if there's a disequilibrium of knowledge regarding a purchase. Now, of course, every purchase has that built into it. Because I'm the merchant. I know my potatoes, right? I've been doing potatoes my whole life. My grandfather was in the potato business. So, and you are just coming in, you need some potatoes for dinner. You could care less about potatoes. You just want them for your challah that particular day. So there's always a disequilibrium. And then, as I mentioned, there could be a disequilibrium in the other direction. I mean, if you happen to be an expert in potatoes and you walk into a market where they're selling all kinds of things, you might be able to pick up a bargain. So, and of course, to some degree, commerce is all about that. We're all trying to sort of outsmart each other. But that's exactly the point. That's our whole point this evening. That may be the way of commerce, but some of it ain't permitted, right? It still doesn't mean you can do it. But if unaware of ona, it's still a violation, right? But if both are unaware of the ona, it's still a violation. Not necessarily. That's what I wrote at first. But I saw an argument like this. The Rav Asher Weiss quotes the machlokas, a debate between the Rav Sefer Achinuch and the Ramban on one side. Sefer Achinuch, Book of Education, often quotes the Ramban. He's heavily based on the Ramban, probably a student of the Ramban. They say, I didn't mean to cheat you. I didn't know I was overcharging. And you didn't know that you were being overcharged. So, this is no violation. The Tur, the first prototype of the Code of Jewish Law, he says, if you're not aware that you're cheating someone, and you're overcharging me by double. But you didn't know it. The Ramban in the Chinuch says, you're not in violation. You didn't defraud me. You didn't trick me. The Tur, the first Shulchan Aruch, he says, you're still in violation. Right. Even though you didn't know. Because factually, it's highway robbery. supposed to be $10, you charge me $20.
But doesn't he know from other merchants who sell the same thing by the cost?
If it happened to be that you overcharged me more than 1/6, but you didn't know. You should have, you could have, but in this case, you didn't. What would be the law? So the answer is, the tour says it's still a violation. Why? You overcharge. Overcharging is highway robbery. The Chinuch and the Ramban say no. The whole point here is what we said at the beginning. Remember, the Chinuch says that this violation is a violation of deceit, lying, trickery, fraudulent behavior.
He didn't know.
Right. So therefore, if he didn't know,
then
there's no violation. That's right. According to Ramban, if you don't know what you're doing, if I say I didn't mean to rob you, sorry, you robbed me. But when it comes to this violation, if I didn't, like let's say, I walk out of here and I put these, and I'm absent-minded and I take this out of the house. I stole something. It's still a violation of stealing. I could give it back to you, but I did steal it. Right. If I take your pen by mistake, it's still stealing. But here, the whole thing is not to afflict. It's not to be fraudulent, to be cunning and tricky. So according to Ramban, going back to last week's discussion, it's more of a personality violation. It's a violation of the Jewish personality, of an ethical personality. You don't conduct yourself that way. It's a matter of staying away from trickery and lies. According to the tour, it's what they call a din in mamon. It's a law of money. This is about money. It's as much about money as stealing is about money. It's not just about being not about character, about being a good guy. Okay. Moving along.
Excuse me. Say the services, you have a plumber. He says right away, I charge so much per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So you know beforehand what he's going to charge.
Right. So, firstly, the Gemara says that in schirus, rental of things, generally it's agreed that rental, these laws do apply to rentals. So that's a form of, you're renting his time out. And yes, you're probably going to take that price, whatever he charges, because you don't want your toilet to be running anymore, right? You want. But the rabbis would still say, if it's really overcharging, that's a problem. Now, as we said before, the pricing has to be evaluated. I mean, if you're calling him in the middle of the night,
That's
another interesting thing. If you say, "Well, to me, it's worth it," he's charging me $300 to stop the toilet from driving me crazy. He's making noise all night. So he said, $300, you should charge me $10 for just jiggling the handle. So you could say, but it's urgent. I need it now. So does that urgency, does that set the price or not? Hopefully, I think we have a source here. If I'm not mistaken, we have a source here that's going to deal with that. We'll get back to that later. Okay. Now, we mentioned before that the Gemara seems to be describing that onah is a form of stealing. They just say, why does the Torah repeat itself? Don't cheat, overcharge, don't steal. It's the same thing. So the Gemara thinks it's the same thing. And therefore it's the same thing, maybe even if you did it unintentionally, it should be. But the Ramban says, no, it's similar to stealing, but it ain't stealing. It's really about the intent. It's about devious. Now, commerce is all about selling for more than it's worth, as long as they agree. But halacha says that that's not true. Rabbi Wiedeblank says, generally, commerce may be about, what can I sell you this for? You don't know it's worth that much, and I'll sell. That's what people say business is about, but not true. It's about, you're entitled to make a profit, but it's not about pulling the wool over on someone else's eyes of trying to sell it for more when it's really worth less. Only within reason. Now, all right, so then we get to the question of within reason. What does that mean, within reason? We all understand that you have to make a profit. So you are overcharging. You got it for $5, right? The wholesaler gave it to me for $5. Everyone charges $6. So aren't you overcharging by 1/6? Because it's really, he could go to the wholesaler too and get it for $5. But what's the whole business of retail? That I'm entitled to make the dollar as a middleman, and then I pass it on to you, and you have to pay $6. You want to be a wholesale guy? It's up to you. Go ahead. Go be it. Now, so at what point do we say it's overcharging? And also, how long do you have to back out? In other words, is there a point where you can say, look, if you don't like the price, you can come back and get a refund. But after a certain amount of time, we can't have everything floating. You say, well, how many sales did you make this year? Well, when everyone figures out how much they got ripped off, then I'll let you know. And they all come back for their refund, then I'll let you know how much I made this year. Businessmen need to know how much they make this year, next year. So when do we say, look, you got ripped off? It's too late. Bav Metzia Mishnah, would you read that for us? Page 2, less than. Less than. Yes.
Less than
1/6. I'll let you read the next one. And we'll let Hannah start. You read the next one. Go ahead.
Less than 1/6, the acquisition is acquired. More than 1/6, the purchase is canceled. 1/6, he acquired it and must return the overcharge. Both 1/6 and more than 1/6 are in enough time to show the merchant or a friend.
Okay. So here, let's use the terminology from my good friend, Rabbi Levine, who wrote a book about business ethics. He was a professor of business ethics and business at Yeshiva University years ago, Aaron Levine, and a blessed memory, passed away, and he's a very, very good man. I had a chance to know him, actually. And he calls it first degree, second degree, and third degree. The first degree is when you overcharge more than 1/6. That's despicable. More than 1/6, terrible. There was an opinion in the Talmud that 1/24 or one. But anyway, we decided 1/6.
Who decided?
The Talmud says 1/6 over. If it's more than 1/6 over, the deal is off. That's first degree ona. You have been fraudulent at the first degree, the deal is off. Second degree, it's exactly 1/6. We say 1/6, that's a lot. Give that back. You have to give it back. Not the whole object. The sale is on, but the overage has to be given back. And less than 1/6, the deal is on and nothing has to be done. Now, in a moment, we'll have to discuss, what do you mean? If it's less than 1/6, so is that still cheating? Is less than what we said, the deal is on and you don't have to give it back. So it sounds like it's not third degree cheating. It's not cheating at all. Or no, we call it less than 1/6 of cheating. It's cheating. So we'll talk about that in a moment. Then the question is, how long do you have to give it back? What does he say? What does the Mishnah say?
Time to show a friend, or time to show a merchant.
Right. So you have enough time to go over to a merchant. When the sale is over, you should go right away to your best friend and say, hey, look at my new hat. Isn't this nice? And you show the hat and say, how much you pay for that? Oh, you know, $50. $50? He's fooled. Don't you know you can get it for $25 next door? Yeah. Then you run quickly back to the merchant and you give it back. But if more time has passed than what it would usually take you to go to a friend or a merchant, I don't know if it's 2 hours or what. It sounds like it's less than a day. It's probably just a few hours. If you have less, if more than that time passed by, sale's on. It's over. What category does that apply to? 1/6 and more than 1/6. Even when it's more than 1/6 cheating, if you let the day go by, less than a day, and you didn't come back for a refund, it's over. Because again, that we it's like a takanat hashuk. We got to keep the market going. We can't have, right? I need to know how much money I have today. I can't have customers coming back from 3 weeks ago returning whole cases of oranges and stuff like that. I can't do it. I can't survive that way. Okay. Now, what if it's less than 1/6 of overcharging? Less than 1/6. So the question is, we said that the deal is still on and you don't have to give it back. So maybe it's permitted. Or maybe it's not nice, but you know, if you did it, it's not a big deal. So, Mr. Kramer, would you read that for us? The Sefer HaChinuch, the Book of Education. If you're not familiar with the book, it's those yellow books down there. They're in Hebrew and English. And usually comes in a brown one volume. And it's a discussion of all 613 mitzvahs, some of the laws, and why each mitzvah is a mitzvah, why God did this, according to his theory. And the fellow is obviously a student of the Ramban. We don't know his name. Could be the Ra'ah of Aaron Halevi from Spain.
I've heard like some in New York, some supermarkets in certain areas, the poorer people, but they take advantage of them and they charge more than the same chain charges them up.
Yes, part of that I think has to do with ripping off. It also has to do with the amount of shoplifting. Mm-hmm. Amount of shoplifting, amount of security guards, risk. In our local Kroger's, you know, near a nice Jewish neighborhood like this, people are buying, you know, every Shabbos, people are buying like it's Thanksgiving, you know. Thanksgiving, people are having a thousand, you know, everyone has 25 guests. So they do well. In a poor neighborhood, how many guests do you think they have? How much do you think they buy for supper? How much do you think? So they don't make that much profit. So they hike it up to make up for it.
But they also have some stores pay more rent in certain places.
Yes.
They
that's true.
More.
Yes. Our city suffers because we actually have food deserts. We have areas that are so impoverished and so dangerous that stores don't want to open up. And if anybody has the misfortune of living in that area, they don't even have a supermarket. So it's an interesting question. You know, maybe if the local, you know, grocer comes in and he's overcharging by three times, maybe they shouldn't get so upset. Maybe it's better than having a food desert where they don't have any place to go. But it's certainly something to consider. Let's continue. Go ahead. But
which one is the last one?
But less, yes.
But less than 1/6, the sages allowed the merchant to profit because of the corn of society, so people can find their needs prepared at all times.
Ah, so two factors here. Number one, we allow the merchant to make a profit. What is it? Not communism over here? Of course, you can make a. You got to make a living. So number one, sure, 1/6. That's right. Here's his written price, and you want to make. He's conflating the overage of 1/6 with profit margin. Again, there's another passage in the Talmud, not about cheating. It just says, "Hamistaker al yistaker yoser shishis." That anybody who's making making a profit, he shouldn't make more profit more than 1/6. But he's conflating that with you shouldn't cheat more than 1/6. Cheating sounds like, making profit sounds like, however much it costs me, I'm making a certain profit. Cheating and overcharging is that there's a certain price, and regardless of my profit margin, I'm charging higher than that price. So he's conflating the two. He says, number one, you can charge over 1/6 of the official price. It says in the book, it only costs $5. You can charge 6, exactly 6, not a penny over. Why? Because you got to make a profit. You got to make a living. Second reason. What's the second reason?
People need to have their needs prepared.
As we said before, you don't want to have a food desert. You want to squeeze me out? You want to tell me I can only make 2 cents on every profit on every orange? Great. I'm not selling oranges. Mm-hmm. I'm not in this. This is not a charity, right? So, so you don't want to put them out of business. Okay, good. So you have to find that balance. Anytime you regulate a market, you have to figure out how it's going to affect different parts of the market, right? So how's it going to affect the buyer? How's it going to affect the consumer? So that's the problem. Okay, the Ramban. So that was the Sefer HaChinuch. He says you're allowed to sell up to 1/6.
So like the barber stores, they continuously have sales. So the original price must be very high if they are able to sell cheaper price.
For
sale.
What? What are you saying?
Say Macy's.
Yes.
They're advertising sale.
Oh, yes.
So the original price must be very high.
Yes.
For them to be able to do that.
Yes, probably. Right. Now you're getting into the question of how do we bring this to modern times when you buy a suit for $300? Are we kidding? And then you see it's made in Indonesia. So how much did it cost them to make it, import it? They have the overhead of the salespeople and the lights and all that. Really, it costs $300. You know? So it's interesting, you know, how exactly would we determine it today? There's so many different types of things. We live in, you know, in a supermarket. You know how many items there are? How are we going to figure this out for all these items, what the official price is for all the items in Kroger's? In any event, now I said before that the Sefer HaChinuch, we don't know his name, but he was definitely a student of the Rambam and the Ramban. And they agreed before about another point, but here, as to 1/6, we just said that the Sefer HaChinuch says, look, You got to give people a chance to make a living. You charge more than one, up to 1/6 is fine. Comes the Ramban on Chumash, and he says, I'm going to read that for us. They excluded.
Ramban?
Yeah, no, top of page 3. Yeah, so we're going to talk. So we're going to talk about overcharging less than 1/6. By the way, while he talks about that, we're also going to get into a new topic: land. Talmud says that cheating doesn't apply to land. Why? Talmud gives a technical answer, but you might imagine that, you know, it's hard to determine how much land is worth. For instance, if someone bought a brownstone in Manhattan for $100,000. 40 years ago, maybe he was overpaying, but it turned out he would make millions. So, you know, who's to say what your land is worth? There are empty lots here that, you know, tomorrow could be, you know, a Walmart. But today it seems like an absolute piece of nothing. So he says, when the Talmud says that land is not cheating, less than 1/6 is not cheating, what do they mean it's not cheating? Go ahead. They excluded. Yes.
They excluded land for overcharging.
In them.
And even more than 1/6 is forgiven, as it is a movable object less than 1/6, even though it is forbidden to overcharge, to afflict as such. But people don't usually cancel their purchase for such small overcharge.
I'm sorry, it's a very literal translation. I'm sorry if it's not so readable. But it goes like this. When it comes to land, they say even if it's more than 1/6, it's all right. Why? Because in them, even more than 1/6 is forgiven. People don't mind. They say, all right, so the house goes for, you know, around here, the houses itself for, let's say, 175, you paid 200. All right, I'm coming from out of town, I need a job, I'll pay, you're asking 200, I'll give you 200. I don't have time to negotiate down to 175. I'll give you 200. People don't mind when it comes to land, I'll pay a little extra, tomorrow it'll go up, won't be a problem. What about less than 1/6? If you cheat, you're over the price, but it's less than 1/6 over the price. So he says, even though it's forbidden, people usually say, it's less than 1/6, $5, $6, all right, whatever. But what did he just say? It's forbidden. He thinks when the Talmud said 1/6 over the price. What do you mean over the price? Ramban says, you're charging over the price? How can you charge over the price? You're not allowed to charge over the price. That's exactly what we're talking about. No overcharging. Tonight's topic is overcharging. Overcharging by a dollar is overcharging. I don't care if it's 1/6, 1/20. So instead of $20, $21. It's not 1/6, it's 1/20 or 1/21, depending how you count. Right? I don't care. It's overcharging. By the way, when the rabbis calculate 1/6, it's really less. Because what they do is you add the 1/6 to the top, and then you calculate it. So it's y equals x plus the y, the overcharging, equals x, the principal, plus y, the overcharging, over 6. That's how they calculate it. Anyway, but moving along. It's 1/6 of the total. Okay. The overcharging plus the object, that's how much. Okay, now, so we have a debate as to whether less than 1/6 is still overcharging or not. So some of them are more into the idea that, look, we got to give commerce a chance, we got to give people a chance to make a little money, and you know that's the way it is, and people, that's the agreement between people. Yeah, you can overcharge me a little bit, just not too much. Yeah. And the other one says, there's nothing like that. It's very straight. You look in the book, for the Apple book, and it tells you how much apples cost. Period. End of report. There's no. Now, what if I? That's how much I paid. Now, how am I supposed? Right? So, and then we have to think about that. I don't know. You know, where does profit come in? You say, sure, I'd love to. It says here that it's you get you get a bushel for $1.50. But that's very nice. But I paid $1.60. So I don't know. They asked the same question at Walmart when he makes them pay underpay.
How much profit one is allowed to make?
So the Talmud says one who makes profit shouldn't make more than 1/6 profit. This class is not about that topic. We have to look into how that works. Usually, when they discuss this topic, they don't mention that. This discussion is usually it's talking about prices. Price includes profit margin, and then on top of the price, you can't have 1/6. There's another passage in Talmud that says one who makes money shouldn't make more than 1/6. Apparently, that only applies to food items. That on food items, you shouldn't rip people off because they need the staples. Don't profiteer more than 1/6. But apparently it doesn't apply to other things. So that's a whole other topic. I didn't have a chance to really look deeply into that. I at the end of my research, all of a sudden I discovered this other passage. I think it's in Bavin Siyaf 40. Okay, let's continue. Now we have the Rush. The Rush has like a whole, he has a whole approach to this, the business of 1/6. So, Anna, could you read that for us? It seems
that even less than 1/6, one cannot afford.
So, he agrees with the Ramban. You can't overcharge, period. Nothing. Even less than 1/6, you can't do it. Go ahead.
If it is worth a pruta, a minimal measure, since...
Right, in other words, if you're overcharging by a penny, all right, fine, penny will let you get away with it. It's not, a penny's not worth anything. But once you get to a serious amount that's worth something, like a quarter... That's overcharging. I don't care what percentage it is. Go ahead.
Since the sale is not worth that price, for the Torah said, don't afflict with any matter that has a monetary value.
Right. In other words, that's it. This is a very strict monetary, it's a mathematical equation. This is how much it's worth, period, end of report. Above that, forbidden. But
the rabbis say that until 1/6 there is forgiveness, for this is the way of business, for the buyer and seller can't get the price exactly right. And for most people, weigh the mistake up to 1/6.
So, several elements here. Number one, it's the way of business. Number two, who says exactly what the price is? How do you know what the price of apples today, tomorrow? It's hard to say. Number three, most people waive it. They say, 59 cents a pound, 69 cents a pound, whatever. Go ahead.
For even if the victim will complain, the assessors will not all say the same, so he is silent.
Why does he not protest? Because he won't win in court. He's going to go to court. So they charged me 69 cents a pound. They charged 59 cents a pound. He's going to go to the assessor, and they'll say, it's worth 62 cents a pound. Well, you know, so it's not worth it. And who wants to go to court anyway? Go ahead. So now we talk about what is a disequilibrium of what? Knowledge. Mm-hmm. Knowledge. Go ahead.
He should not afflict him, except for a coin, which as long as it is not 1/6, one can use it with no hesitation. For another person will accept it, and there is no loss.
And so the little aside there, there's a whole other discussion in the Talmud about coins. In the olden days, you had, you know, cheap, you know, made out of real metals. Not like today, these phony things, they're such good alloys that, you know, your penny never breaks. A truck could run over your penny. In the olden days, they had real silver, real copper, and it wore away very easily. And therefore, many times you give a coin, and it says it's a dollar, but are you kidding? It's so worn away, it's obviously not a dollar anymore. But most people would say, well, you know, as long as it's mostly there, you know. So there are different rules for coins, because usually you could it's still legal tender as long as, you know, it says the emperor's picture on it is good enough. Go ahead.
Or maybe since it is the way of business, this way for.
So now the Rush will try a whole new approach. His first approach is that you shouldn't overcharge 1/6, but you know, 1/6 is not that bad. I mean, it's a way of business, and what are you supposed to do? And everybody waives it. Or.
Adds more than it is worth, or the seller lowers his price because he doesn't want it, or he needs its cash value. Therefore, until 1/6, it is a sale, and there is no ona at all.
So now the Rush changes gears, and he says, maybe I'm wrong. The opposite is true, that maybe maybe 1/6 it is a sale. Why? Because he gets into the subjective that matters, right? It's worth more to me, right? I don't even want it. I want to get rid of it. It's a going out of business sale. I'm trying to get rid of my merchandise. I don't want so much, right? My father retired from stamps. He was had Parkinson's. He knew he could. He wanted to get rid of his stamps. He had to get rid of it. So there's all kinds of different reasons. So the rabbis are saying, we assess that a lot of people, for various reasons, may overcharge up to 1/6, and we're not going to get involved in that, and we're not forbidding it either. So maybe it's permitted. Go ahead.
And that requires further investigation.
Well, that's a technical term, meaning I'm not sure. We have to look into it more. Go ahead.
A God-fearing person will try to fulfill both sides of this question.
So in other words, don't overcharge. When it's 1/6, don't overcharge it. And when someone overcharges you 1/6, don't give it back. Right? In other words, so this is a very Ashkenazic thing. A lot of later, you won't find the Rambam saying, well, I'm not really sure what the answer is, but if you're really God-fearing, you just be strict. That's not a Rambam kind of thing to do. But in the Ashkenazic world, the pietists and stuff, there were a lot of people who often wrote like this and said, well, you know, if you want to be really strict, then you should do this. And in this tradition, the Ramah, the Ashkenazic gloss on the Code of Jewish Law, other people, Mishnah Berurah, people write things like this, like, well, if you want to be pious, try to get out of it. But we have here two views. So one view says overcharging. What overcharging? How much? I mean, after all, maybe an unusual circumstance. Maybe he wants to get rid of it. Maybe he doesn't mind. Maybe that's the way of business. You know. And the other approach, price is a price. That's it. There's no way about it. Now, I'm trying to think, can we relate this to the question of business, not business? In other words, one view is that this is an interpersonal problem. One view is that it's not nice. The other view is, it's not a matter of not nice. This is, you're stealing. It's a highway robbery. It's robbery. These two views in the Rush, or the Machlokas between the Sefer HaChinuch and the Ramban, and the Rush in the middle where he's not sure, as to whether 1/6 is less than 1/6 is a violation or not, could you relate it to the idea of whether it's more of a monetary violation or whether it's more of a character violation? Can you figure that out? Think about that. Let's try it. If it's a character violation, it's not right to charge more than the official price. So then even if it's a little bit, shouldn't do it. But if it's a monetary violation, so you could, well, that's how the business world turns. Or you can take it the other way. It's a character violation. If both people are consenting, well, character violation. But if it's a monetary violation, meaning if you're not supposed to charge more than the official price, then if you did, I don't care what your motivation is or whether you think that's the way the business world tumbles or whatever, who cares? It's a monetary violation. It's like stealing. So, I don't know, I could take it either way. But it might be related to that question. Okay, what else? What does it mean that land is different? So the Talmud said, oh, land, forget about land. Now, by the way, in the Talmud itself, there are two views about this. We take the simple view, the bottom line of the Talmud is we take the simple view that there's no affliction for land. Exactly what that means, we'll talk about it in a second. But there is a rabbi in the Talmud who says, no affliction for land. If it has to be exactly the price, otherwise you're in trouble. So that it's stricter, that land is stricter than movable objects. Okay. But let's assume that land is more lenient than other things. What's going on? What does this mean? So the Talmud says, well, the Torah says, don't afflict one hand to another. When you're when you're buying something from the hand of your fellow, don't afflict him. So your hand, land does not change hands. So therefore, there's no cheating when it comes to land. It's a technical derivation from the verse over here. Now turn to page 4. So Shulchan Aruch indeed codifies that slaves in those days, slaves were considered similar to land because you inherit them, and holy matters if it belongs to the Beis Hamikdash. There's no cheating, there's no overcharging when it comes to these things. Even if you charge 1,000 for 2,000, he says, comes the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Isserles. You see that on page 4. Some say that until a half, it is so, but more than a half. More than one for two, it is onah. he says, even when it comes to land, if you went one for two, then it is a violation and the deal is off. You can't double charge. You can't double charge to charge twice as much. That doesn't work. There's a limit to this law that there's no cheating with land. If it's worth twice as much, there's cheating. We already saw the Ramban, who said on Chumash, and we see it again, that the obligation not to overcharge does apply. You see, there's two things. There's a violation and there's the returning. The violation, according to some, according to Ramban, the violation applies certainly at what do we call it, first degree ona, second degree ona, third degree, first degree, more than 1/6, second degree, 1/6, less than 1/6, third degree. The violation, according to Ramban, is in all three stages. According to the other people, in the top two stages, not less than 1/6. And then the returning, that's a different thing. The returning, don't afflict, don't overcharge. And then there's returning. There's a separate law that you have to return. At what level? After 1/6. Higher than 1/6. You have to return it. That's a separate thing. So what about land? When it comes to land, the violation is still there. All they're saying is you have to return it because you overcharge too much. That doesn't apply. And you know what that is? It's a rabbinic law. Nowhere in the Torah does it say you have to return. If you cheated your neighbor, you should return it. No. That's a rabbinic law. And that only applies to over 1/6. And that only applies to land. But says Ramban, the violation, it applies as soon as you go over the price at all. More than one pruta. Small amount. All right. Now, yes, I promised this before. Here it is. What if a man says, to me it's worth much more? I think Mr. Kramer asked the question before. For me, it's worth more. So how do we evaluate subjective prices? So would you read that for us on the bottom? Ritva.
Ritva says that if it is worth a lot to you, it is not overcharging, but setting a price out of desperation is cheating. Kitzo says, no, if a jewel has overcharging, so does your favorite thing.
Okay, let's see. So the Ritva says, I'm summarizing a very large piece of Ritva over here. So, Ritva says, in Kiddushin, in the laws of marriage, if it's worth a lot to you, that's not overcharging. So there is such a thing. They say, Rabbi, you're overcharging. You're charging three times as much for this thing. That's what it's worth to me. Okay. So that's what it is. As we see in the laws of marriage, you say, hey, wait a minute, that's a piece of junk. It's not worth anything. Say, no, to me it's worth. Okay. So maybe that does it. Now, what about out of desperation? Sometimes a piece of bread is worth $1,000. Why? There's a famine.
Because
there's a famine. There's no food. So it's a piece of bread or a bottle of water or an umbrella.
They're taking advantage.
Right. In a hot day, a bottle of water is worth $20. And just go to the ballpark. And on a rainy day, an umbrella is worth $20. So the question is, out of desperation, what's the story? So he says, setting a price out of desperation, that's cheating. When someone comes to you and says, look, I'm starving to death, and you say, all right, that'll be $7,000, that's cheating. The Ketzot, this is one of the commentaries in the Court of Jewish Law, the Ritva was a student of a student of the Nachmanides. Ketzot was a rabbi about 300 years ago, and he says, no, if a jewel has overcharging, so does your favorite thing. In other words, we know that when it comes to jewels, there is an opinion in Talmud. Rabbi Huda says that jewelry, there's no overcharging. But I'm not sure we follow that. But he says if a jewel has no overcharging, then so does your favorite. Let's say you say, oh, it's my favorite jewel. So what? It's still overcharging. So is overcharge? Can you say something is overcharging if it's your favorite thing? All right. That's another question. All right, moving along. So regarding special priceless items, so we mentioned that there's a debate. I didn't translate it here, but Rabbi Huda says that a Torah, an animal, and a precious gem, there's no cheating. But most rabbis disagree. Why a Torah? Because, after all, it's priceless. And what about a gem? So you have one earring. How much is the other earring worth? It's priceless because I have to match it, right? And or an animal. You say, oh, I'll give you another animal. No, that animal, I'm going to spend extra for this animal because I want an animal that can pull, you know, the weight together on a yoke. And I want the two animals to be identical. So I have a match. So this animal's worth more than a different animal. That's what Rabbi Yehuda said. We don't agree with him. He thought that during a war, anything relating to war, armaments, shields, spears. Right, they would say that black, right, so according to those, right, black market is undercharging, right, it's usually undercharging for things.
Yes.
Usually the black market, well, it depends, it's contraband or it's...
maybe that's what it is, yeah.
Anyway, so what's the nature, so if we now get cut to a more fundamental question, what's the nature of this prohibition? So there's a debate between Rav and Shmuel about how to calculate 1/6. Whatever it is. And we follow Rav. Now the problem is, usually, we follow Shmuel. Why? In monetary matters, there was two rabbis, Rav and Shmuel. They were the first rabbis in Babylonia to set up yeshivas. And usually in monetary matters, we always follow Shmuel. And other things, we follow Rav. So is this a monetary matter or not? This is a question we've been talking about all along. Is this a prohibition of be nice? You know, don't talk Lashon Hara, don't eat a cheeseburger, and don't overcharge people. It has nothing to do with money. It happens to be, we're talking about money. But it could have been a cheeseburger. It's simply a violation of something in the Torah. For instance, what part of the Code of Jewish Law? There's one section of the Code of Jewish Law for monetary matters. There's another section for things that are permitted and permissible. Things related to a mikvah and a woman, things related to kosher and non-kosher. It's all in the Yoredeya. There's a section for, are you allowed or are you not allowed? Strangely, they put the laws of, the Rabbi Yosef Karo put, and the tour put the laws of usury, it's about money, usury is about money, he put in the laws of forbidden, not forbidden, permitted, forbidden. What is this? Is this something that's either permitted or prohibited? It's like personality violation, or is it monetary violation? So some say, well, what difference does it make? Well, if Rav or Shmuel are arguing, if it's a monetary matter, we follow Shmuel. So some rabbis say, oh, we follow Rav. Wait a minute. How can you follow Rav? It's a monetary matter. So also the Gemara compares this debate as to whether you agree to overcharge to a debate about stipulations in money. So let's compare. We're going to compare two people who said to each other, hey, look, I know we went to rabbi's class, we know you're not supposed to charge too much, but I'm charging you too much, okay? Are you okay with that? Yeah, I'm rich, I don't mind it. It doesn't bother me. Is that okay? Number one. And then number two, can you make stipulations about other things that are forbidden? So let's take a look. Would you like to read for us? It was taught. Bava Metzia, it was taught. Bava Metzia 51a, it was taught.
Which page?
Big paragraph here.
Oh, down here?
Yeah. Oh, wait. It was taught.
It was taught, one who said to his friend, I send you this, on condition that you don't have claims of fraud against me. Rob said, he has claims.
Because even though you made condition there wouldn't be any claims, the law is there are claims. You can't get around overcharging. Go ahead.
Shmuel said, he has no claims against him.
Again, if it's a monetary matter, we should follow him. That he's saying, and that's what he's saying. Shmuel is saying, it is a monetary matter. And in monetary matters, you can always stipulate. Two consenting adults in a business arrangement can always make, right? But if it's not a business arrangement, this is a violation. It's no different from a cheeseburger. You can't stipulate a cheeseburger. I'm eating this cheeseburger on condition that I don't violate the cheeseburger. Right? But if it's a monetary matter, I can say, you agree, I agree. What's the problem?
No,
right?
No.
Right. Go ahead.
Let us say that Rav is like Rabbi Meir, and that Shmuel is like Rabbi Yehuda.
Right, so we're going to compare this debate with another debate. Go ahead.
For it was taught in the Bereita, was Bereita?
An outside source. Read on.
Okay. An outside source from the days of the Mishnah. One who says to a woman, You are hereby betrothed to me on condition that I need not provide food, clothing, and conjugal time. She is betrothed, and this condition stands. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yura says, in monetary matters, his condition stands.
As we know, the Torah says, even for a slave girl who marries a Jewish slave girl, marries the master, he must provide food, clothing, and marital time. Right? That's the time, so time in the bedroom. So, therefore, the rabbi said, certainly a regular wife, of course, must provide these three things. It mentions in the ketubah, by the way, it says this. Now, even if it wasn't in the ketubah, it would still be an obligation, but it mentions it. Now, somebody says, I want to marry you, but I don't have time for all that other stuff. It would just be officially, technically married. This is so I can get my green card, you know? So he says, Rabbi Meir says, fine. Look at this. Rabbi Judah says, only the monetary things. Call tonight Shemamon Devar Kayim. Anytime you make a condition about monetary things, it always works. I'm not sure about usury, but let's say generally, any condition about monetary matters, if you say, I'm only giving you this money after you go to the moon, then you only get the money after you go to the moon. That's whatever condition you make works. Now, of course, one of the three things is not money. It's marital time. So that, of course, doesn't apply, as Rashi explains. But as far as food and clothing, if you want to stipulate no food and clothing, woman agrees to it. She accepts the ring on condition that there's no food and clothing are provided, perhaps because she's rich, or she's so poor she's desperate. Either way, then it works. Rabbi Judah says, but Rabbi Meir says, no. You can't make conditions against things in the Torah. If the Torah is saying morally, it's maybe the same question there, the Torah is saying morally, relationally, thou shalt provide food, clothing, and marital time for your spouse, then that's what it's saying. Ain't no exception to that. It's a moral imperative. However, is the Torah saying, this is our business arrangement. In society, husbands provide for wives, but if she's a fancy girl, she's got a millionaire, but she doesn't want to be tethered to his business going up and down, whatever it is, his ne'er-do-well, credit cards, whatever, then she can separate herself from that and say, I don't want any of that stuff. So the same debate pertains over there. Now, so you can ask the same question. If the Gemara is comparing this business of Tanai Shiva Mamon, they're comparing this idea of making a condition on monetary matters to the laws of cheating, so they're obviously thinking that the laws of cheating are also monetary matters. Although you could have argued differently. Could have said, monetary matters, it's not a monetary matter. And it could be that that's what Rav and Shmuel are arguing about, and that's what Rav Yehuda, are these things monetary matters, or are they not monetary matters? So that's the question. Now, what if they're upfront about the overcharging? What if they said, so what's the law? Well, regarding this question, let's say they're upfront, they say, look, I'm overcharging, take it or leave it. I say, I take it. Give me the money. Give it to me. So, Rambam says, the laws of Onah apply. Second to last paragraph. If you make a condition, it doesn't work. Who's he following? Rav. We don't follow Shmuel. Shmuel thinks it's monetary, and we follow Shmuel in monetary matter. This is not a monetary matter. Even though the Rambam's in the laws of sales. And here we find an interesting thing about Jewish law. Because Jewish business law, is found within our religion. It's not found in our civil courts. Jewish business law is inside our religion. Therefore, the religious and the secular, so-called, or the monetary, the business, it overlaps. So, even though you're trying to do business, we say, sorry, sir, this is no business. This is a prohibition. This is an ethical prohibition. So the ethics and the business come together. If you're in a civil society, we say, look, whatever two people want to do, it's not our business. Unless the government wants to get involved. Sometimes the government says, we have certain moral, we have moral imperatives, or we think it's not going to work. But usually it's not a moral thing. Usually it's just a societal question. But here, there's an overriding principle. Two people cannot agree for you to be a jerk, because it's forbidden to be a jerk. So that seems to be the Rambam. It says here, bottom line. Now, However, 1 minute, wait a second. Not so simple. Although a person tells you we are completing this transaction on the condition that you are not to hold me responsible, the law is when the statements are made about being without being explicit. Such an instance is the part, right, if you don't know what's going on. But if you say, look, I'll tell you exactly, I'm overcharging you by $100, then it does work. Because you see, then the ethical violation goes away, because you're not tricking him. We're up front, it's all over on top of the table. If I say, look, I'm selling you this for $100. Oh, that sounds like a good price. I'm thinking, you know, that's really not a good price. They say, well, you accept that? I accept it. You're not going to sue me. If you're going to sue me, I'm not selling this to you. So fine, I'm not going to sue you. But he doesn't know. Then it doesn't work, because then it's an ethical violation. You're being tricky. But if you were upfront and you said, I'm telling you, then what is it? Even the ethical violation is not there, because you're telling him upfront. So there's no ethical violation. Okay. So, for instance, just to bring this down to the Rabbi Levine, in his book, talks about Electronics Emporium. It was a famous, like Crazy Eddie type of thing. So, oh, crazy prices. We have the best, insane prices. We have the best prices in the whole world. Remember that? So he made a deal. We will not be undersold.
Yeah,
right. That's a sign. But the fine, later on, he changed it. The fine print said, if for 25 items, you or more, you can show that you could have done better in another store, we'll give it back to you. According to what we studied tonight, that would not work, because on each individual item, there may have been more than 1/6 of ripoff. So you can't, that wouldn't work. Also, he's forcing you to go and add it all up and go to the other store. You should be entitled to it without all that research. You know, you should be, if he overcharged, he overcharged. You shouldn't have to research it and get the bill from the other store. You bought a pack of candies. It says 100 candies. But there are only 99. So the Talmud, on the one hand, says that when if I tell you I'm giving you 100 candies, I have to give you 100 candies. So what do you mean it's 1/6? Like 101? It's only I gave 99. It's only 1/100th off. It's not 1/6. So he said, no, 100 is 100. Right? So when it comes anything, if I say 6 pounds, that's be 6 pounds. You can't cheat in your measures. So 6 to 6. But the rabbi thought, Rabbi Zilberstein thought, that when it comes to a bag, if you have a bag of candy and the bag said 99 and he ripped you off, in other words, I don't know how many, I didn't count it. It says it has 100. Turns out it's 99. Maybe you could sue the manufacturer. But it's not fair to me. What else? I buy a new washing machine. I wanted to get rid of my old washing machine. So you come in and you know you're new in town. So I charge you double for the washing machine. So there are two. Rabbi Zilberstein said there are two bases on which I may get away with it, overcharging. Why? Number one, it's plugged into the wall, so it could be considered land. Part of the ground. There's no cheating on land. Number two, I'm not a merchant. What do I know? The Talmud says, if you're not a merchant, then these laws don't apply. Why? Because you don't know the prices that well. So, yeah, I can look it up, but I'm just a plain guy. If I want to sell it to you for that much, I need the cash. I don't know. So, could be that I can get away with it, very strangely. But again, you should, if you're tricking someone, obviously you can never do that. Yeah, what if there's a wide range of prices on the internet, different types of stores, and so some do want to suggest that a lot of these laws would not apply to this business of six. One said, how can we be possibly in today's market for certain things? Again, certain things are very fixed, but for, you know, the used car market seems fairly fixed. I mean, there are certain things that seem, you know, fairly standardized. But when it, coins, there are certain things that have books, and everyone knows what it is. But for a lot of items that we buy on a regular basis, it's hard to say, you know, the internet and different types of stores. So a lot of these things would be hard to say. But you know, it's like certain things, you know it when you see it. If you know you're doing that, then it's an ethical violation. To conclude, Chazal understood there's a need, I'm quoting from the Mishnah, website about the Mishnah, Chazal understood there's a need within the economic world for people to vary prices and try to make a profit. That's a very broad statement. I would say some of the rabbis said that that's true. However, what must not be forgiven is that within the aggressive and competitive world of commerce, that the revelation of God is no less than in the base medrash. In other words, just like when we're davening, oh, we want to get the davening right, and we want to get the lulav right, we want to get the esrog right. When we come into the business world, we also want to get all the business right. And we still, although usually it's a very wild west kind of world out there when it comes to business, because everyone's just trying to make a profit, and everyone's trying to trick everybody else. But so the rush toys with that maybe that's the way it works. And you know, you have a certain, the Torah gave you a little leeway to cheat people a little bit, you know. And the other view is no. If you know that you're overcharging at any amount, it's wrong, shouldn't do it. Period, end of report. So that's an interesting thing about the, when we're talking tonight, we're talking about an area where ethics and law overlap, where business law and religious law overlap. And that's the nature of Jewish law, that there's no difference. It's all in one book. As my teacher says, sometimes you're reading about the most obtuse thing about, you know, a cow and an ox and a goring and a pit and things like that. And all of a sudden the rabbi says, as we will explain with the help of God in the next page. So he said, we don't leave God out of the book. You know, we do discuss very obtuse, very, very detailed, very monetary, very worldly kind of things. But even in those discussions, we have to have our kippah on and try to figure out what God would want from us as well. And then finally, we notice the idea of two consenting adults. Well, here in this case, the Rambam says there has to be absolute consent. Your consent without knowing all the facts is not good enough. It has to be a knowing consent. The knowing consent, there could be something to that. But again, it's debated in the Talmud. We seem to follow that position that you could, once you've clarified, you could get away with it. But again, if you know in your heart that you're overcharging, that is a problem. And ultimately, these laws say, V'yareisam elokecha, the connection with these laws, the Torah says, you should fear God, I am Hashem. That only you can know whether you're actually ripping him off, or whether you know, I didn't know how much it would cost. If you know in your heart that you're ripping someone off, then that could be a problem. And according to one opinion in the Rush, even if you're, even with a small amount, ripping off is ripping off. You should be making the basic price and the basic profit margin that most people are making.
Something happened years ago once. We were on vacation with a car. My car broke down, and I went to a gas station. They didn't know me. Normally, they charge a reasonable price, but they know me. He knew I was on vacation, I'm not going to come back. But an old car, he said, I'm charging up so much. I said, oh, that's a reasonable price. He said, I see you have an old car. If it come with a new fancy car, I would have charged you more. He said that. He was very honest about it.
Yes, sometimes
he said, but you have an old car.
A lot of good people out there.
Probably don't have much money.
A lot of good people out there. Yes. There's so much room for ripping people off in situations like that.
Excuse me?
There's so much room for ripping someone off in a situation like that.
Yes, you could.
What are you going to do? You're in the middle of nowhere.
That's what I'm saying. You said, I could rip you off, but
right.
You have an old car. Right.
A lot of people take pride in what they do. They take pride.
He was honest.
Yes.
Sure, that's right. I think it too. I'm stuck. He can charge me what he wants.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us tonight. And next week we will be discussing buyer beware, being up front about the merchandise. So it's also a matter of cheating, but the question of blemished merchandise and things like that. But then we're going to take a break for a week. December 7th, we have the opening of Federation. So the final session will be on December 14th.